As I was saying, my husband's in good shape. He went through the surgery beautifully. So I am back, but I will probably be out a day here and there. You know, he's got a follow-up with the surgeon that I want to go to and a few things like that. So I may be out for a day here and there. So every week, check and see, you know, before you come in and see if I'm among the missing. But I think I'm pretty much back now. So, but as I said, there may be a day here and there where I don't. Okay. I don't know where you think you are. I think it would be nice if you were through the if statements at least, and we can start looking at the combos and things like that. So I'm planning to look at a few things in here and then move up to week 5, which is the week we're on. But I thought I would go back because there's a few things kind of worth looking at in these areas here. Okay? But I'm letting you handle the if statement type things. So I'm going to look at loops, combo, etc., that zip. And you can start by taking that down. This that comes up and doesn't let me know where I am. Okay, the loops, combo, etc., if you go into it, the first one I want to look at is under VBNet CIS 56. And then under loops, and it's called muffins. So the one I want to go into is muffins. Muffin shop, and it kind of goes through a lot of different things that I want to be sure that I've covered. I don't know where you think you are, but as I said, I'm going to stop here, and if you have questions beyond this, I'm going to be around till 4 with a little meeting in between. Okay, so this is in, as I said, under week 4. If you go in and click on loops, combo, etc., zip, that's where I'm at. And we're going to go through the ones in there. I had a class assignment that I was going to have you do, and then I decided that I didn't want to waste time having you do a class assignment. So I was going to talk about that, and that's in the 5th week. So we're going to go into loops, combo, etc. Okay, so if I go in and look at this and start it, okay, first of all, I've got a combo box that is showing a bunch of different things with checkboxes next to them. And I really somehow got it too small, but there it is. So I am going to say I want poppy seed and cranberry. And the quantity is 4. Now, obviously if I was doing this in reality,
I would have to have a different quantity for each of the selections. But I was lazy. So if you want four poppy seed muffins, you get four cranberries also. I didn't lay it out so that I had the quantity for each. I do have a discount for a dozen that I'm taking your word for, and you can check if you've got a dozen. But at this point, they would only have eight. So I say calculate, and it comes up with $7.60. Then I can clear this, and I want cornmeal, and I want 12 of those, so I'm going to get a discount for a dozen. And I calculate, and that's $10.26. And I clear that. And now I'm going to get one of everything. And so I calculate that, and that's $4.75. So now I'm done for the day, so I'm now clicking up summary. And summary tells me that the highest sale for the day was $10.26, and the average sale for the day was $7.54. Okay. So, that's how it ran. Now, this box, if you look over at the properties, you can see that that is a checked list box. So if you look at a form and you can't figure out what is what, you can always click on it, come over here, and it will tell you what kind of a thing it is. So this is a checked list box, okay? Down here is a text box. Over here is a radio button. So I went and got a radio button. Now, usually radio buttons are a group of things. This time I just had one radio button. And I said I wanted that to be a discount for a dozen. So that's my one radio button. Okay, so I dragged these all over. I've got four buttons and I'm all set. So now if I go in and look at the code, okay, I've got the form muffins checklist box, and I want to have a load on that, okay? I want to have the load of it on that. And so I can make it a different event. I think actually the load may be the one that comes up automatically. But I can make that a different event. Up until now, we've had, like, the second one down is the click event, and everything has been a click event. This one is a load event. Okay, so if you go back over and look at the design, if you click on something, and then you come over here where that arrow is, that's where you get to change the event. I think load must be the default because it's not showing. Okay, so if I click on this, that shows some of the events. But if I click on this and then click on the, you know how I told you clicking on the form, any place does a load? If I click on that, it comes up and notice the cursor is right there. So that means it was going to the load event. Okay. If I take this all out, and I go back to the form, and I click on that, and then double-click on load, it comes up with the load event. Okay, so I clicked on the thing, and it came up with the load event. And so now I'll put it back what I had in the load event. But I clicked on the box, and then I clicked on load in the form load, and it loaded. Okay, so that's how I get a load. And so this, when the form is loaded, I'm putting up the checklist box. And then if I want to move this up at the top where I had it, I can just grab, I believe. And there it is. So I can just grab it and drag it up, and there it is. Oh, actually, this was a... Actually, this was on the form load. Sorry, I wasn't loading with the boxes. I was thinking of another example. Cancel that. It wasn't associated. The next example I'll have, this was just a plain load. I'm sorry. I read checklist box. That is how I could find out the events for a particular thing. Is click on it and then do a load. But I lied to you. Okay, this whole thing was called Four Muffins Checklist Box. And for some reason I just had it in my head that it was when it was loaded, that box was loaded. But it was actually when the form was loaded that I did the load. So that just was, in other words, I didn't have to have anything clicked. I could have just clicked here. It didn't do any harm that I had that clicked, but I could have just clicked here, and it goes to that place. Okay, because that's the form load. So, now I want to be able to have, this is the name of the box, and I want dot items, and I said cornmeal. So I brought over that checklist box, and now I am putting what I want in the checklist box. If I wanted 10 things, I'd put in 10 things down there. I only want 5 things, so I'm putting in the 5 things. So I'm saying items add, and it adds them in, and it also gives the checkbox next to it. Okay, because it's a checklist box, so it automatically gets the checks. So I said muffins.items add this one. Some items and muffins add this one, add this one, add this one, add this one. And so I've added them all in. Okay? And sorry about my little side trip. Okay, so now I've got 4 buttons on there. Okay, so the first button is the calc. And I set up a count to keep track of them. And I set up a C discount. And that is a decimal. And it was 0.9. So that's, you have to pay 0.9%. And then I send up the week amount. So then I said for 0, for count equals 0, to the count minus 1. Okay, and again, this gets me into the problem that we always encounter. Count counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Index starts with 0. So I am controlling the index, which is count, and I want it to start at 0. I want to go through the last thing, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. But the count is 5. So I subtract 1, and then it will go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. If I didn't subtract 1, it would go up to 5, and there is no fifth thing. When I start in the indexes, when I start at 0. So the indexes go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So to get that 4, I say count how many are there, which is 5, subtract 1, and that gives you the 4. Okay, because I need the index. So now I'm saying for count equals 0 to 4, that's basically what it's saying. So I'm saying, look at that box. look at the items in that box and count them. And it counts up to 5. Subtracts 1, and I've got 4. So this reads from 0 to 4. So inside that loop, I say, if get item checked modified by count is true. Okay? So this is a way of saying, okay, I'm starting at 0. So I'm checking to see if cornmeal is checked. If cornmeal is checked, if it's true, then I'm going to do a calculation. If it's not true, I'm dropping out, because that means you didn't order that muffin. Okay, so I'm going through each of the 5 muffins, and I'm checking and seeing if the get item check count is equal to true. The count is pointing to. So if the item is checked, what that is basically asking is the item checked? Is the item that the count is pointing to checked? So when it's 0, that's cornmeal. If cornmeal is not checked, it ends the if. Because the next 4 is now at 1, is bran checked. If bran is checked, it does this. Otherwise, it drops out and goes back. Looks at 2, if poppy seed is checked, then it does the calculation. Okay? So the calculation simply takes work amount O plus the quantity times 95. So I'm trying to get the total that they have. So I say work amount O plus the quantity times 95 cents. I send all, sell all my muffins for 95 cents. Okay? So let's say that I checked poppy seed and blueberry. Oh no, let's make it cranberry. So I skip one. Okay? And the quantity is 2. And so what am I going to do when I come in here? Okay? When count is 2, I hit poppy seed and it's true. So I take work amount O, which is 0, and I add to it the quantity times 95 cents, so I add $1.80. Okay, that's what I do for poppy seed. So work amount O is now 80 cents. So then I go through and I come through with count equal to 3, blueberry is not checked. Then I come through with count equal to 4, cranberry is checked. So I take and multiply the 2 times 95, I get the 180, and I add it to work amount owed, which gets me up to 360. Okay. So if I run this and do the calculate, 380. 95 times 95 is 190. That would be why. Okay. It's the basic math. Is 380. I can do that. 95 times 95 is really 190. Okay, so it's really 380. So it works. Yeah. So, okay, I'm not totally back. Questions? Do you see where that came from? So it's now come up with 380. Okay, so then I want to do a check. I'm not done yet. I haven't put it out yet. I've just got in work amount owed. So now I check and see if the disc, if the radio button is checked. So I call the radio button, RAD DISC, and I'm checking to see if it's checked equals true. If it's checked equals true, then I will multiply the 0.9 times it to give me the discount. Okay, but it's not checked because I didn't get a dozen. So it's not checked, and I move down to the next thing. So now I want in my summary to know what the highest item is. So I'm saying if work amount owed is greater than work highest sale, well, work highest sale is zero. So the first time through, okay, the first time through, it is going to be greater than zero. And so I will say change work highest sale and put work amount owed in it. So now I'm going to have 380 in it. And notice the work highest sale is defined up there in the global variables, so that I could use it in other places if I wanted to. So at this point, the first time through, whatever your sale is going to be greater than zero. And you could have said equals zero up there, but it defaults to zero. So I take and put work amount over my highest sale. Okay? And then I format the amount due for currency and put it out. And I take and I add work amount owed to my total. And I add one to my customer account. Because at the end, I also want an average. So I have to know what the total was and what the customer account was in order to calculate the average. Okay? So I'm taking the 380 and I'm adding it to work total. And so now that's 380. And then I have got a work customer count. And that is going to be add one to it, so it's now one. And if I were to stop and do the summary now, then it would give me 380 divided by 1 as the average sale, because there was only one sale. And it would also give me it as the highest sale. So if I go in now and hit summary, the highest sale is 380 and the average sale is 380. Because I only had one sale, so it was the highest and it was the average. Okay? So then I do another one, and let's say the next one came out at $5. Okay? It's not going to, but let's say the next one came out at $5. So after it went through and did its thing, it would say if work amount owed, which is 380, is greater than $5, okay? So I'm checking to see if it's greater than, and $5 is the work amount owed, and that's greater than, so I will change the highest sale to be the $5. Then I would add the $5 to the total, which would get it up to 880. Add one to the customer account, which would get it up to 2. If I asked for the summary would say the highest was $5 and the average was 440. Okay. So, when I hit calculate, this is what happens. Okay, what did I just do? Maybe that one? Yeah. That seems to work. Okay, so now clear. I just did the set to unchecking things. So I did a regular clear. I set the radio disk checked equal to false. And then when I went through the muffins and said set the item check state to unchecked. Okay? My biggest complaint about Visual Basic is there is no way in hell that I would come up with that statement just out of the clear blue sky and know that I could write that, because I, unless I do it often. So, you know, it's a matter of, yeah, I know there is something I can do about that and looking it up. Okay? Or making a list of the things that checkbox items can have a set item check state. Okay? So we can check to see. And I'm setting it to unchecked. Okay, and then when I come to clicking on the summary, I go in and I say if the customer count is greater than zero, that means you've actually made a sale. I do the divide of the customer count by the total, and I put out the average, and I put out something that puts out the highest sale. Okay, so I put them both out in a message box. So I set up a message box, and the message box is going to contain this thing that I set up. Okay, so I set up a line, and then I put it out in the message box. Okay. So there is the calculate. And down here is the write it out. And if the customer account is not greater than zero, it writes out no data. So, that's a little bit of the logic that goes into one of these. Questions. Yeah.
Could you just run it and get a summary on it just to see what it...
Yep. Okay, a summary with nothing or a summary with something?
With a couple things.
Okay, blueberry, 4, calculate, there's 380. Clear. Cornbread, bran, 3, calculate, 570. One of each, calculate. What did I just do?
You didn't define quantity.
Thank you. And that brings me to another point. I tend to not check every single thing because the program gets out of whack. But if I were doing this professionally, I need to check and make sure that somebody did indeed put something in quantity, because it's going to crash if it didn't. And so I would have to put a check-in so that when I hit calculate, the first thing it would do was check and make sure that I had the data that it needed, and it would put out a message saying, please enter quantity, quantity is required, whatever it is, so that I do that. And as I said, I don't do that because I'd lose control of the program. It starts to get very long, and I'd be doing the same thing on every single program, okay, of taking those little if checks. So I don't do those. But if I were doing that because somebody was paying me to do it, then I would definitely want to make sure that there was something in the quantity field so that it didn't crash when I didn't run it. And so what you want to do when you're testing is you want to make all the mistakes you can and see what happens when you make the mistakes and does it catch them. Okay?
And once you're done testing it in a good shop, somebody that doesn't know your program will test it. And they will try to break it. And, you know, I was talking with my brother this weekend, and he designs something that has to be right. And he said, you know, the lab, the amount of time that is spent in the lab testing and testing and testing, you know, far exceeds what it takes to actually design it in the first place, because you have to be very sure that it's accurate. Okay, so now we're back to doing it and seeing if we can not crash it this time. Okay, so now the summary is 1425, which was the highest. It added all those things up, and my average sale was 697. And I'll take its word for it. Okay. And if I'd wanted to, I could have put the customer count in there, too, to know how many customers I had. Okay. Okay, the next ones I wanted to look at are in the same group. And they are open project. I really liked it so much better when you could do it with file open. And those are these three faculties courses. And those are the same program, but setting something up three different ways. So I think I will go with the setup first. So click on that one, the setup one. Okay. Okay, this one, first of all, is one that I wrote in a previous version. And in some of the cases, when you try to run something and you may be running into it, it may tell you that it can't run it, or it's a previous version, and you're getting some kind of message. Yeah, just ignore it, say okay, or whatever. What it does is puts in this information, inherit systems, windows, .forms. So it's basically doing a fix of, this is an older version, this is the fix that I'm going to do so it runs in today's version. Okay? So you just basically okay it to death, and it will do the fix so it runs in today's version. Okay? And there's several of those out there, especially under my .NET. My .NET. Okay? So, in this one, I get to pick which semester I'm talking about. So let's say I'm talking about the fall semester. And then I come down and I can choose which courses I want. So I'm going to pick Oracle Add a Course. Visual Basic, Add a Course. Okay, and that's all that I have. So those are the things that are available. Now the main thing is how I got those available. Okay, these are combo boxes. And I have Combo Semester, which has those three things in it. And I have Combo Courses, which has those five things in it. Okay, and by setting those up so that when the form is loaded, the stuff is available. And I do it on a load so that it loads at once when the form is loaded. Okay, so that's one way of setting it up. So I added the courses, then I clear, and I clear the thing out, and I exit. Now these boxes, if I look at them, these are combo boxes. And the drop-down style for this particular one is simple. Okay, so that particular one is a simple drop-down style. The other combo box that I have, which is right here, is drop-down. So that one is drop-down. So there are a variety of choices you can do. Drop-down list, simple. So I chose to do two of them, drop-down and simple. Okay? And then this one here is a list box, my regular old-fashioned list box. Okay, so those are the things that I put on there with two combo boxes and a list box. And the key thing that we're looking at differently is on this one, I put the data in those boxes by using the form load. And I just added the data in at that point. And I've got two other ways that I'm going to do that. Okay? So after I make those choices, when the CBO semester select an index change, and this is where that one tends to be the default, selected index change. But if you can't get the one you want, that's what I was talking about at the beginning when I made a mistake and was thinking another one was this, is you click on the box, and then you click on that kind of flashing thing that looks like lightning in the properties window, and that would allow you to pick an event, because this is the event. The event is selected index changed, and you can see it out of the side where it says selected index change. It handles CBO semester selected index changed. So that means that if I pick one of them, I've changed the index, right? If I pick one, I've changed it. And so when I change it, it then does an add to the list box that says courses for the spring semester. So when I run this, it comes up like this. If I pick fall, now it says courses for the fall semester. And that happened when I overhear that the index changed because I picked one of these. And when I picked one of these, it echoed this. And it also wrote a straight line. Okay. And then when I want to add items, when I say add courses, okay, so I come to this combo box, I pick something and say add course, it just takes that course and puts it into list courses. So it takes the one I selected and puts it in. So this is, when I click on that, it adds the current course. Whatever one is chosen, it adds to this. Okay, so if I pick the next one, Visual Basic, and say add course, it's now added that in. So I'm adding to a list box. And adding to a list box is very straightforward. You just say listbox.items and it keeps track of where it is, and it just adds it the next thing down. In the clear, I've got kind of a strange thing that I don't actually use that often. But if you take on each of these and set it to -1, it clears it back out again. It clears it out. And I think I've got another way to do that in the other ones. Okay, so that's one way. Now I'm going to close this, and I'm going to open the same program, but a little bit differently. So I'm going to open faculty courses now. And this time, what I'm doing is using the collection. So if you look at collection, and you highlight collection, I put in there the strings, the things that I want to be in that box. So I did it when I set up the properties. I put the three things that I wanted to be in that box when I set up the properties. In the previous one, I did it when the form was loaded. In this one, I did it when in design time, when I was setting up the properties. And they both work. And so if I go to the second box and look at the collection, it has the different courses. Okay? So again, what I'm doing there is in the design stage, I'm making a collection. In the design stage, I'm making a collection of the things that I want to go in there. So in one case, I did it during design. In another case, I did it as soon as it loaded. Okay. So if I look at the code in this one, it doesn't have any code where it fills those boxes because it got done at the collection. And on this one, the clear, I just said reset text, and that worked as opposed to the setting it to -1, and I like that one better. So it just says reset text. Okay, so that's an alternative way of doing that. And then the third one user entry. So on this one, I am making it so it's coming up and it's saying end of semester, enter done when finished. So I'm going to put in spring, fall, summer, and I'm done now, so I'm entering done. Okay. So I'm entering done. And now it says enter the course. So CIS 120, logic. And CIS 122. web, and CIS 156 VB, and CIS 159 PHP, and then I'm finished, so I hit done. Okay, so I did user entry at that point, and you can see I can go ahead and pick the one I want. And if I come in here, there are all the courses that I put out. Apparently I didn't type web fast enough. And there's VB. And say add course, and it adds it. And there's logic, add course, and it adds it, and so forth. So the difference in this one is that the user had to put it in. And I always use the example, my husband at one point had a client that sold jewelry. And it was when the price of gold was changing almost on the minute. And, you know, they were changing the price of gold all the time, and they were constantly calling him and saying, come in and change the price of gold. And he said, or send one of your people in, and he did. And he said, you know, it would be better if you let me fix the program. But they didn't want to pay to fix the program. So they would instead pay to have somebody come in and change the price of gold every day or so, or a couple of times a day. And all he had to do was go in and put in the user entry so that the user that was doing it could then put in the price of gold. And that would run for that run in the next time. And finally he convinced them that it wasn't going to cost him a lot to do that. And they let him do it after, you know, a week of craziness. But that's when you might want user interfaces, if you have something, a price of something that's constantly changing. And right before you do the run, you want to set the price right now. Okay? So on this one, when the form puts load, I put up an input box, end of the semester when enter done when finished. And then I have a loop that keeps doing that until user entry was done. Okay? And then I said, okay, now I want you to enter a course, and they entered a course. When done, so they did it until they ended done, and then it was done. Okay. Now, obviously, done with a capital D in a smaller case was not a great thing to do. You might want to have a very simple code that they could get right and not have to be sure that they remember capital D-O-N-E. But anyway, but so this means that when the form was loaded, it immediately prompted the user to enter the information that was needed. So the user had to enter the information. So that's three ways that I can get data that will, you know, be used in the program. One is to set it up in the properties using the collection. Two is to set it up so that I put it in during the load. And three is to, during the load, prompt the user to get the information that I need. So if I have information I can set it that I need to run the program, I can set it up those three ways. Obviously, to use the user input, you really want to have a special circumstance. Because do you really want them entering all that stuff every time they run the program? But if it's the kind of stuff like the price of gold that changes rapidly, then it's a great thing to be able to enter it every time you run the invoices or run the whatever it is. And this one went back to setting the selected index to -1. But essentially, these three programs are the same program. except for the way they bring in the data. Questions? At times you will do things and you end up having these empty things. I hit something, did something. It's best to get rid of these that don't have any code in them. And to go and do cleanup, and usually I do, but apparently I was playing with this yesterday and I must have left that in there. Okay. We will look at the read and write. I'll go over that next on Thursday. But essentially, if you were in CIS 120, it's the same thing that I went over there. Very simple read writes, and I'll go over that again. But I would like to look at, which one did I want to look at? The combo in class assignment. And that's the one that I said we were not going to bother to do. Still trying to figure out whether I should do that. Does anybody have any questions? On the if statements. Okay, I've got the if statements were down on the week 3. Did anybody encounter any problems or have any problems they want to ask? Well, think about that, and if you do, you can come in on Thursday and ask them. So, given that, I think I will say I would like you to try to do this combo and try, if you can, to get it done by Thursday. It's not that bad. And then I'll go over it. Okay, so because I have the solution for it and I'll go over it. But I think it is a good time to try that, so I'm going to leave it. And we will go over that. We'll go over the read-writes. So I'm going to look at break-in validation. And when you get to the breaks, I'm going to look at the one that says PR minor, and then we'll look at PR MIM. And this is the thing that I said comes up if you're running a program that you haven't run, and this is an older version. And again, under my .NET, a lot of them come up that way. So I just say OK, and it comes up again, and I just close that out, and it's happy. Okay. But it puts that inherit system windows.forms.forms up there. And that is apparently what it needs to be able to run an older version in .NET in this environment. Okay. So what this is break processing. And I've got a file in it that we are going to read, so I'm starting to look at the file stuff. This is a file called minor.txt. Okay? And if I run this program, every time now I've hit end of file. Okay, notice it said end of file came up. We will look at that in a minute. So these are the processes. So what I want is to process a break means when something changes. So this is my department number, the 12, the 15, and the 17 are my department numbers. And I want to write out a total when the department number changes. So, to start out with, if I want to do that, what do I have to, what is the order got to be? The order of the records on the file. If I want to list out all the records on the file, and every time the department number changes, I want to print out a total, then what order do the records have to be in?
Numeric.
Yeah, numeric, but by what field?
The department.
By department. Because if I want to print a total every time the department number changes, if they're in order by department, that's easy to do. If they're not in order by department, then I have to set up an accumulator for each department and hold all the information. And I could really never recreate this of showing all of the department records and then showing a total for that department if I didn't have just a few records, because I'd be basically holding too much in memory. So I need to make sure that my file is sorted by department. Okay? So if I go in here, okay, there it is. So there are the records. Okay. And these happen to be put in as string data, but that's fine. So there are the 312s that match those three. There's the 415s that match those. And there's the 217s that match those. So I'm reading a record, writing it out, and adding it to my totals. Okay? So this really does get into some of the reading and writing and that sort of thing. So when my form loads, I do a file open, and I'm opening file one, and the name of file one is minor.txt. Okay? File 1 simply means the first file. If I had 5 files, it doesn't matter which one I call 1, which one I call 2, which one I call 3. I just open them in sequence. So I'm opening the minor text. And the open mode is input, which means I'm opening it for reading. Okay? I'm opening this only to read. So I can't change this file, because I'm opening it only to read. Come on, let me get that. There we go. Okay, so I start out, and the first thing I want to do is, if it's not in the file, if it is in the file, then I come down here and write out the final totals for the last department and the final total. So if it is not in the file on one, okay, that means if there are still records on it, if it's not in the file. Then I go in and I take in the department number and the amount. Okay, so I input the first field. Essentially, I read a record. And I take the first field, which is work department number, and put it into work department number. And I take the second field and put it into work amount. And I define these right up here. So the first field that encounters the 12 goes into work department number. And the second field that encounters, which is the 500, goes into work amount. Okay? Now, I have also a hold department where I'm holding the department number. And right now, I didn't define it, so therefore it's got a zero in it. And so I start out and I say, if work department number is not equal to the number I just read. Okay? So it's not equal. The work hold department is not equal to the 12 I just read. Okay? Actually, it's a space. Okay, so it's not. In the comparison, I should have said, it wasn't looking, was a string, so it was comparing to a space. If I put integer there, it would be compared to a zero. Okay, so then I wanted to check, and so I said, if work hold department is equal to nothing, then I'm going to write out a total. If work hold department equals work department number, then work minor total is zero. So let's run through what that just said. Else, work department number is put into work hold. So what I want to do is I want to set up a hold area for 12. So work, why would I move it up there? Okay, so work, what is it called, hold department? Starts out empty. And work department number, when I read it, the first record, has a 12 in it. Okay? So what I want to do, my goal is I want to get this 12 over here. So that from now on in, when I read in, I will be comparing 12 to 12. Until I read the 15. And when I read the 15, then 12 in the hold area will not be equal to the 15, and so it will reset the hold area. Okay? So at the point, so I read and I read and I read, and then I read the 15. And at that point, I say, okay, wait a minute. When the 15 comes in, I write the total. Okay, I write the total for the 12, because I've been gathering the total for the 12. So I write out the total for the 12, and then I put the 15 over here so that I will start comparing to the 15 as I go through. Okay, so my goal is the first record, I just want to move the 12 in. From there on in, when I read a record that does not match what's in the hold area, I want to write out a total and reset the hold area. And then keep processing. And when I read the 17, it doesn't match. So I write it out and then move the 17 to the hold area and keep going. Okay, so I have two reasons that work department number is not equal to work hold. One of them is it's the first record. One of them is it's changed. So those are the two reasons. So I got to know which reason it is. Okay, so if work hold is not equal to work department number, then I know it's one of two reasons. I got to know which one. Okay? If it's not equal to spaces, then that means it's because it broke. Okay? Because it's either equal to spaces or it changed. So it's equal to it broke. So this means it broke. It was a break. This means it was a break. And so if it broke, okay, I write out the total. So if it breaks, I write out the total when it breaks. Whatever. I write the total. So if it breaks, I write out the total, and there it is, department total, etc. I move to the hold area. And I reset the total to zero, the minor total. I reset the minor total to zero. So if a break happened, I want to write out the total line. I want to take the number and move it to the hold. And I want to reset the total to zero. The minor total to zero. If it was a quote, in other words, if there was nothing in it, then I just want to take and move the department number to the hold area. So in other words, the first record that I read, I just want to take it and move it to the hold area. So, the next group of three records down here is the processing. That's the processing. And if a break happened, I've already read the total, and now I want to process. And in this case, if I've just written out the total, what I'm going to process is the record that caused the break. If it matched, okay, then I just want to process the next record in sequence. So I process, and I can process the record that caused the break. Either causing the record that caused the break or the next record. Okay? If it's in the file, then I want to print out the department total and the final total. So we're going to run through this hopefully in the 5 minutes we have left. If not, we will pick it up. Okay, exit. Oh, I managed to close that up. Wasn't that clever of me? Where is it in use? Does Does anybody see where I have that floating around?
Right on the lower line there, the one right next to the notepad, is one open to the right of it?
Right, right and left,
yeah,
I don't know.
No,
that's my smart board. Okay, I'll exit this, and now I'll try to open it. Okay, and now I can run. Whatever. Okay, so the first thing I do is I read a record. So the input, and notice this is a great big, every time I hit process. Okay, I had this, if I was out in the real world again, I would have it all happen automatically. But I have it such that it will only process one record every time I hit process. Okay, just for show and tell purposes. So the first time I hit process, it reads that first record, and it has the 12 and the 500 in it. Okay, so that's what it's got there. So it comes down here, and it's not in the file. The input is actually what read it. I jumped ahead of myself. Is work hold department, which has nothing in it, equal to or not equal to work department number? They're not equal, because it's got nothing in it. So then I ask, if work department number is not equal to spaces, well, it is equal to spaces. So I come down here, and I have now set up a work hold department. And it now has a 12 in it. So now I drop out of that if statement, and I process the record, okay? So as I process the record, let me hit process up here. As I process the record, it writes out the 12 line. It says work department and a few spaces and formatted as currency. So it wrote out the line. And then it's got a work minor total and a work final total. So it adds the 500 to each of those. Okay, so it adds the 500 to each of those. And that finishes the subroutine. So the next time I hit process, it is going to read the second record. Okay? And when it reads the second record, it reads the 12 and the 100, and it asks if work department is not equal, but they are equal. So since they are equal, it drops right out of that if and goes down and adds the 100 to each of these and writes out the line. And so when I hit process, it added each of those and it wrote out the line. Then I hit process again and it reads the third record. It writes it out and it adds 50 to each of these. So this is now at 650. This is now at 650. Okay. So the next time I hit process, it reads the 15,200. So what happens when it reads the 15,200? Okay, it comes in and it says, is work hold department, compare it to work department number. And they're not equal, right? They're not equal. Is work department spaces? No, it's got a 12 in it. So it says, okay, write out the line that says department total and take the thing that's in work minor total, and so it writes out the 650.
And then it says, okay, now take and move the 15 over to the hold and make the minor total 0. Okay? So the minor total is 0. And I'm sorry, I skipped to the power and wrote out the line. I wrote out the line. Okay, after it finished, it dropped out of the ifs. It wrote out the line and then added to the minor total and the final total. So I'm adding 200 and adding 200. Now notice the final total is keeping growing, but the minor total I reset to 0, and so it stopped. Okay? So then the next time it reads, the 15 matches, and it keeps going through like that. When it finally hits end of file, when it is in the file and it reads and there's nothing left to read, then it comes down and it puts out a message box that says end of file and writes out the two total lines. Okay? So, if I go through this, it comes up with that end of file message. So there's the end of file message. When I click OK on that, it then writes out my two totals. And the last group had a total of 260, and the final total was apparently 1570. Does that make sense?
The end of file is where I've had trouble. When it runs, finishes up with the 17.
It tries to read again.
Right.
And there ain't nothing there. Well, there's a marker that it puts in when it makes files that tells it it's end of file.
So how do you run through that logic if you have hit the end of file and you've processed the last
record? Well, if you processed the last record and you try to read another record and it says if not end of file, but it is end of file, so it drops down to this else and writes end of file and puts out the two totals.
Okay.
And then it closes file one. Questions. I'm done. Sorry it went over, but this wasn't the right time to quit before we got to the end of it. Thursday, we're going to kind of clean up some stuff with the work, read, write, and I'm going to look at the next level of this, which is a break on minor, intermediate, and major. And so we'll look at that. If anybody wants some extra credit, you can do a flowchart for this before next Thursday. Just to help you think through the logic. So if you want to do a flowchart for this for extra credit, you can, but we'll look at it next Thursday. This coming Thursday. Whenever.